is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekly news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. You know, there's a lot of news. It's hard to keep up with it all, actually. But there is so much happening in our nation. And, you know, our job and our role here at America Out Loud is to get the story right, first off, and to get it to you. And we're seeing this new paradigm of media shift that's happened in our nation. I want to take a moment to point out to you and thank you all for the tremendous growth we've had at America Out Loud. We've just celebrated our five-year anniversary, so we're truly excited. But more than that, since we turned that back on with the new site and all the things happening, our growth has been record phenomenal. I mean, it's been incredible. So that just tells you the need of Americans out there to be informed and to be with people who passionately care about the Constitution and our great country and nation. So thank you again, my fellow Americans, for being here on Viewpoint. And we're going to start the program off here. Senator Ron Johnson will join us. Senator Johnson served as the chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee from 2015 to 2021. He's now the ranking member for the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. He also serves on the Budget, Foreign Relations, and Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committees. Senator Johnson, it is great to have you back on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Well, Malcolm, hope you're doing well.
Doing terrific. Just really excited about everything that's happening. Of course, keeping up with all the battles and the political battles is job number one. I'd like to start up front with the infrastructure plan. Now, this is just happened, I believe, on Friday here. As folks listen to this on Sunday morning, this was where the GOP they rejected the Republican senators, the Biden infrastructure plan. And now the word I understand is they're trying to work towards another deadline or a bipartisan deal next week. In fact, the AP reports, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has indicated Biden will look to act without Republican support if there is no consensus when Congress returns. What's going to happen with this, you think?
Well, I always do caution people when they're asking for us to work together in a bipartisan fashion to be careful what they wish for, because one thing Washington, D.C. is very good at is in a bipartisan fashion, mortgaging our children's future. And so what the Democrats want to do is that they want to take the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package that really wasn't COVID relief. More than $700 billion of that $1.9 trillion package isn't even going to be spent until 2022 through 2028. We call them the out years. So it obviously wasn't COVID relief. And Malcolm, when we passed that $1.9 trillion package, there was $1 trillion left unspent from the previous $4 trillion of money that we mortgaged our children's future with. Mm-hmm. So this is an insane amount of spending. And so what I've been advocating for quite some time, for months really, is seeing as every Republican senator was opposed to the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, my suggestion is it ought to be the conference position that any new spend, whether it's on this China bill or whether it's on infrastructure, ought to come from repurposing that $720 billion in the out years that wasn't COVID relief and spend that now so we don't further indebt our children. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seems to be a pretty common sense approach. $700 billion would buy an awful lot of new infrastructure, repair of old infrastructure. But unfortunately, Democrats, it's either their way or the highway on just about every important issue facing this nation.
The packaging of these things like COVID, you just mentioned, and infrastructure, the problem is a lot of the packaging is it's all smoke and mirrors. It's not what they say it's for. And so it's all of these pork projects and earmarks that are put on these things. Now, I understand the GOP is proposing about $500 billion back for this opening bid for the infrastructure. They're still up around a couple of trillion plus. There's no end to money spending with these folks. Isn't that part of the problem is the packaging and the fact that I don't think most Americans really understand that what they say it's for is hardly ever what it's for?
Well, the classic example that Orwellian naming of bills is the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, where, you know, the insurance policies increased by double, triple, sometimes quadruple. And of course, President Obama was awarded the PolitiFact Lie of the Year by saying, if you like your doctor, you can keep it. If you like your healthcare plan, you can keep it. And those are lies. People lost their doctors. People lost their healthcare plans. And so, you know, it's the same thing is true today. I mean, we just had this Endless Frontiers Act, and myself with a number of other fiscal conservatives blocked the pretty much automatic passage of that thing last Thursday, because it wasn't another $250 billion completely unpaid for. Basically money that is going to be funneled through government agencies like the National Science Foundation to colleges and universities to somehow create an industrial policy for the U.S. to counter China's malign activity. I mean, I just don't buy it. It's not going to work. And again, it's just going to further indebt our children by $250 billion. So, you know, what we were able to do is block its passage late last Thursday night. They wanted to pass this thing at 11 o'clock at night, having just developed a manager's package of about 30 amendments nobody had seen, you know, a couple of hundred additional pages of the bill. Just, you know, go ahead and by unanimous consent, let us add this to the package and let's get this thing passed and let's go home. So we upset a lot of our colleagues because we made them work Friday morning, didn't get to go home right away, and we've delayed this. So there is still a possibility of defeating that bill. And it's a Chuck Schumer priority. Every Democrat voted for it. I have no idea why we had 18 Republican senators vote for that as well. But they did. We're trying to dissuade at least nine of those colleagues to not vote for final passage, even though they voted for cloture.
Yeah. It seems like on all the bills and all the spending we're talking about, it's really the same story. It's the packaging, it's the program, it's the overspending.
Well, first of all, they have a much easier marketing task. They're giving away candy. I mean, and it is free and it is tasty stuff. Mm-hmm. Where Republicans, we're the dentist trying to sell you the Jill and Novocaine to take care of the cavities created by the candy.
Wow.
So no, it's a much more difficult task. I mean, it's like if you got a mom and a dad, and the mom is, or I'll say the dad is always willing to go down to Disney World. You know, the kids love the dad. It's the mom that's going, family, we don't have the money, you know, and I don't think we should put ourselves any further in debt.
Yeah.
So dad's popular, mom's not so popular, right?
Yeah.
So it's a similar type of dynamic. The American public loves benefits, but we just keep piling on the debt and we're just whistling by the graveyard. But unfortunately, we're whistling by it in a bipartisan fashion.
Yeah.
So no, I would say Republicans are not doing a good enough job pushing back. If they were, we wouldn't be so close to passing Chuck Schumer's priority on this, you know, $250 billion spending boondoggle that's, again, labeled as countering China's malign activity. I just don't think it's going to be effective doing that.
Let's turn to this. This is a really crazy story, but one that you've certainly been in the front of as well, and that's the Wuhan lab story theory. No, not crazy that it potentially came out of the Wuhan lab, but the fact that all of a sudden there's also, I mean, crazy, but national interest. Everybody's all of a sudden interested in the Wuhan laboratory and Dr. Fauci. We were talking about this, Senator Johnson, back in March of 2020, February and March. I did a couple of blockbuster shows on this topic. We knew back then this was from the Wuhan lab. This was no soup or a bat or a restaurant seafood place du jour down the road or the boulevard. We knew exactly where this had come from. We looked at all the research and the evidence, but yet the media played along and played against the whole thing. Why the change of heart now, all of a sudden, do you think, in this story?
Well, first of all, I agree with you. As soon as Tom Cotton made that connection of the Wuhan lab to Wuhan and the virus, that's always been my assumption. Again, I don't have any hard proof. It just makes an awful lot of sense to me. And of course, because I've been at the tip of the spear advocating for early treatment, I've been in contact with world-renowned practicing physicians and also medical researchers, and you know, awful lot of them also have just, you know, they just made came to the conclusion that this was a chimeric man-made type of virus here. But what actually broke the logjam here is one of the mainstream media's own, a former science writer for the New York Times, Nicholas Wade, put together an almost irrefutable article, just laid out, here's the case for a lab leak or origin theory. Here's a case of a natural evolution. And he really didn't come to his final conclusion, but you know, the evidence is so overwhelmingly in favor of, you know, a man-made virus leaked from a lab that he let the readers come to their own conclusion. But again, because it was one of their own, now all of a sudden they couldn't avoid it. They couldn't continue to suppress that kind of information. So now it's a news story. But, you know, Malcolm, that's the problem we have across the board. You know, my Hunter Biden report, there's no news there, according to the mainstream media. Nothing to see, nothing troubling at all. There's all kinds of news. There's all kinds of troubling aspects there. But if the mainstream mass press, if they make the pronouncement that there's nothing to see, there's nothing to see. I've always said that the bias in the media is revealed far more in what they don't report versus the very overt bias in what they do. So that's how they really reveal their biases. This is, if they don't report it, it's not news and America doesn't know about it. And as a result, we got President Biden as president, because we've seen polls that had the American public, if Biden voters had known about Hunter Biden, they would have voted for Biden in enough numbers that President Trump would still be president.
Yeah. You know, as a conservative leader, and you're one of the strongest conservative voices in our country, and I will say that, I mean, there's a handful that come to my mind, and you're certainly one of them. And you've got to be frustrated as hell because, you know, a lot of people don't realize you really are a businessman first and foremost, and really, really are a citizen that went to Washington to do good and attempt to fix the system. We know someone else like that was called Trump that tried to do the same thing. But you're unique in that way as you bring a different, fresh perspective to it. This sort of thing, and I know it's an underlying thing, we talk about the media, all these stories point to that. It's one of the biggest stories to come out of this era, how they get everything wrong and how their objectives are so un-American. It's unbelievable. And yet, you know, you've got to be frustrated to be handcuffed and tied. And I'm thinking, I put myself in your hands, your feet a minute, actually, Senator Johnson. And I'm just thinking, I know I would be. And give you an example right here on the story we just talked about. Here's another example. Facebook. I mean, all these oligarchs are playing like they think they own the entire parade. They come out and said, I think it was Friday-ish or something like that, said they stated, you know, that, it was a couple weeks back. They said that they would no longer remove posts that claim COVID-19 was man-made. And so they made this big assessment like they were playing God or playing God's media somehow. And it was OK to do that. Now they come out on, and this was on Friday, by the way, and said, oh, by the way, we're going to keep Trump suspended for a couple of more years. Why do these people think they're sort of in the role of playing God? And why does anybody even care what the hell they think?
Well, they have enormous power and they do think they're gods. I mean, the arrogance, the smugness when we've had some of these tech company CEOs before our committees, it's really quite jaw dropping. I mean, one case, we had the head of Twitter in front of us and Mark Zuckerberg as well, Jack Dorsey from Twitter. And Ted Cruz asked him, so do you think your platform Twitter could be used by your company to impact our elections? And the guy completely denied it. And, you know, when it came time for me to question, I said, well, listen, you're all on board with the Russian collusion with Trump theory, you know, that Russia interfered in our elections by running ads on Facebook. They're using, you know, so you're all about trying to prevent Russia from using your platforms to affect our election, but you don't believe you can yourselves? And of course they can. Again, I just point out the fact they literally did tip the scale of this election by suppressing the Hunter Biden story in favor of Biden and against Trump. So the influence, the interference of the media and social media in our politics and our elections vastly outpaces anything any foreign nation could ever hope to accomplish. Yeah. And they're in an utter state of denial. I mean, I think they recognize it. They're just not going to admit to it.
Yeah. You know, Senator Johnson, I tell listeners all the time, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I truly believe the what you're talking about right now with the media, the mainstream media and the social media oligarchs and all of these people here. To me, this is going to be the biggest story to come out of this historical era of time. Because it is historical, the moment of political disparity that we find ourselves in right now as a nation. I think more even than the election fraud, more than even the pandemic itself, the fact that the media was there to get all the stories wrong and to play the way they have played this thing, I think is going to be, when you look back 50 years from now, I think they're going to see how wrong this all was and how the free press let us down. You agree with that?
Absolutely. I think it's the biggest force in our politics today. Yeah. Is the power of the media. And listen, we've always had biased press. I mean, you go back to the broadsheets, back in the founding, you know, just unbelievable rancor when it comes. But there's the broadsheet for the Federalists versus the, you know, the Democrats, or, you know, whatever the factions were. But they weren't so powerful. You didn't have them all in lockstep, basically supporting one party, and then just have a few other outlets far smaller and far less powerful. So it's the consolidation of power that is so disconcerting. You know, you go to Ukraine and, everybody's talking about the corruption in Ukraine. They always point to the oligarchs that control the media. And the first time I heard that, I go, well, you know, talk about the pot calling the kettle black here. You know, we just don't call our media oligarchs. We call them billionaires. You know, but we have the exact same thing with Jeff Bezos or Zuckerberg or Jack Dorsey, or, you know, just go down the list. I mean, we have our media oligarchs, but our media oligarchs are far more powerful and exert far more influence than I think any other media anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and we're seeing it. And it's become, I mean, it's really become a big problem because it's twisting all of these stories. And again, it is the biggest problem. It makes our job here, Senator Johnson, and what we really are trying to accomplish for the American people at America Out Loud so important in the work that we're doing here. You know, I want to talk now. I want to talk to you about the vaccines. You know, we're very fortunate at America Out Loud that we have people like Dr. Peter McCullough, like Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet, like Dr. Stephen LaTulip, and some terrific MDs that are part of our team and part of our outreach. We have really made a conscious effort to cover COVID and the vaccines. It's one of the big stories we are on top of all the time. And, you know, in the story of the vaccines, there's a lot of ethical questions about the push of these vaccines. What's really been unsettling, I guess. It's not funny. It's unsettling and it's disturbing, actually, how these players out there and people are offering prizes and gifts and things if you get a vaccine. I mean, I just seen something yesterday where Gavin Newsom selected the winners of the $50,000 COVID vaccine prize in Ohio. They had $1 million lottery, several of those, actually. You could get free fries at Steak Shack or Snake Shack, whatever it is. And all of these places and things, it would free something, free whatever. I've never seen in my life some sort of a medical treatment or some sort of anything where everybody was trying to give something to somebody. You talked about candy just a little bit ago. My golly, there's a lot of candy attached to this vaccine that make me very nervous. Why is this all happening in the way that it's happening?
Well, I agree. It's kind of getting me to scratch my head. And by the way, I've had every flu vaccine for the last probably 40, 50 years. And I'm up to date on all my standard vaccinations. You know, I kind of entered this discussion involuntarily when a reporter asked me whether I'd been vaccinated. This is when we didn't have enough vaccine to go around. Right. And I said, no, because I've already had COVID. So I'll let other people get it first, because I probably got as good, if not better, immunity than the vaccine is going to provide me. Right. And so all of a sudden now I'm being attacked as being an anti-vaxxer, which I'm not. I was a big supporter of Operation Warp Speed. I think this vaccine generally is very safe, seems to be very effective. That's what the science tells us. But, you know, anything you inject in the body, there's some risks. And what concerns me is, as we progress, this indiscriminate mass vaccination, not even taking a look at medical necessity, you know, ignoring the potential dangers. And by the way, because I've been in contact with all these medical researchers, you know, people were voicing concerns about vaccinating people that had been previously infected, because with COVID, it's not the vaccine or the virus that kills you. It's the body's immune system. So if you vaccinate on top of a previous infection, you might actually spark that hyperactive immune system. And so people have always been concerned about this. And now there is growing evidence that it just seems is being ignored. and glossed over. So I don't think there's complete transparency. It's creeping me out that they're trying to push this down into children, you know, talking about vaccinating children without parental consent. Of course, a child can't give informed consent. And this is not an approved vaccine. It's got an emergency use authorization. If this go through the normal course of complete observation of this phase two and phase three, you're not going to have full approval till the end of 2022 or early 2023. Although now it sounds like they want to speed this up really quick. I don't understand it when we've got so many people have been vaccinated. Numbers are way down. Mm-hmm. There's indications that if you're previously infected, you may have at a higher risk of getting some of these very serious and deadly adverse effects. And Malcolm, the current numbers off of VAERS. There are more than 4,000 reported deaths on the VAERS system. Mm-hmm. 3,300 of those have occurred within 30 days of vaccination. 1,500 have occurred on day 0, 1, or 2. And when you read the news articles, it's not national news, but when you read the local news articles about somebody who has an adverse effect, right, there's a very similar pattern that, again, the Faucis and Collinses and the health agencies just seem to be blowing off. Mm-hmm. And of course, the politicians like Biden and Newsom, I mean, they're literally offering $1 million lotteries for this or something. You know, it just creeps me out. It just does. So I'm not anti-vax. I was for Operation Warp Speed. I'm glad people have gotten immunity and they got vaccinated, but people need to be informed and we shouldn't be forcing this on anybody. A tenet mm-hmm. of medicine is you should not be pressuring, coercing, or nobody should fear reprisal for not getting a medical treatment. It's their body. It's their health privacy.
It always has been that way. You mentioned early on moments ago that the vaccine could be safe or might be safe, but yet the record of deaths, from what I understand, and I'm a layman, I'm not an MD, but we have MDs on our platform here, surely. And from the record amount of deaths, from what I understand, and do you understand this as well, the same, never in our history, or even, I've even heard the statement, like all the vaccines combined, we've never had this record amount of deaths ever from a vaccine. And this is EUA. It's this experiment. This is not approved whatsoever. They're going after the kids. They're going after pregnant women. They're going after anybody at all. And yet there's a record amount of vaccine deaths and hospitalizations. And so I think the question is, are you understanding the same thing, number one? And really the big question I want to ask you before we move off of it is, what oversight mechanisms can we put into place, talking about the EUA mass vax program, to ensure some sort of safety?
Well, I'm speaking out about this. I'm certainly relaying my concern of what I'm seeing in the numbers. And again, if you compare this to seasonal flu, that again, tens, hundreds of millions of people get the seasonal flu, and on an annual basis, what's reported on the VAERS system, and it's not a perfect system, not by a long shot. It's voluntary reporting, not by doctors, it's by the individuals. And you probably get a few dozen associated deaths on the VAERS system. Again, we're up over 4,000 on the VAERS system. And one of the knocks on the VAERS system is just really grossly underreports adverse events. I think in COVID's case, because people are aware of it, you're probably going to get a higher percentage of adverse events being reported. But you know, we're approaching 20,000 hospitalizations, I believe. There is something going on here that should mm-hmm. be taken seriously. There should be an independent investigatory board established here, where there's nobody with any conflict of interest. People that approve this should not be part of this. This should be an independent board of medical experts taking a look at this data. But you're not seeing any kind of push for that, because quite honestly, the politicians that funded all this, everybody's patting themselves on the back. They don't want to hear any bad news. And of course, people who approved it, they don't want to hear any bad news. So I feel pretty lonely out here as an elected official. Yeah. Raising the concern about this and getting attacked for doing so.
Now, I want to touch on the January 6th Capitol. You put a tweet out. You said Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and I called for a completely independent commission to investigate January 6th right after the breach. How do you set up something completely independent in today's hyper-partisan politics? It's pretty difficult. Sum that up for us, this whole commission, and listen, let's get to the point here. What are they really trying to accomplish on the left by shuffling this out again? What is the point? That, is this trying to make sure Trump doesn't run again? Is this just a political machine? Is that what this is all about? Or is there some level of truth? Because there's a lot of evidence where they were inviting people in and things that happened on the 6th that would lend me to know that this was planned and there was a lot of orchestration with this thing that make me very uncomfortable.
Well, let me first explain what Lindsay and I called for within a day or two after January 6th, a completely independent, and that means independent of Congress. You know, I think the failure of January 6th is we weren't prepared. And you have congressional leadership, including Nancy Pelosi, who have ultimate responsibility for security of the Capitol. So, you know, that's why I voted against the January 6th commission, is she was going to appoint the commissioners. You know, other congressional leadership was going to. They're going to appoint all the staff. You're not going to get the primary question I have answered is like, why weren't we better prepared? You know, why? You know, I entered a eyewitness account by J. Michael Waller, a very knowledgeable observer. He teaches political warfare at Fort Bragg. That was, of course, criticized as me entering disinformation, conspiracy theory into the record. No, it was an eyewitness account, but. J. Michael Waller came up on the west side of the Capitol, and that's where most of the violence occurred, is on, you know, that western, I call it the inauguration tunnel. There was no police presence at all. He didn't see anybody. Yeah. You know, so we were completely unprepared. And so, you know, what the Democrats try and do is completely politicize us, no doubt about it. They probably figure they can't impeach Trump a third time, although if they thought they could, I
would. Well, there was talk of that at one time.
Yeah, precisely. So I wouldn't put it past them. They might try, but they probably figure, you know, twice is maybe enough. So, hey, let's do the next best thing. Let's have a commission that we, you know, wink, wink, say we'll end by December 31st of 2021. But we just don't come to conclusion. Why don't we drag this thing out, to at least November 2022? So completely political. It would not have answered the questions that are going to go unanswered in all the other investigations. You know, I'm doing my own investigation. I want to put together as accurately as possible a recreation of what happened. I want a good historical record of what actually happened, not the false narrative of thousands of armed insurrectionists. We've got two Senate committees. We've got House committees. We've got 400 plus prosecutions that are going to incur. Those are individual little mini investigations, right? You're going to have an adversarial process, a prosecutor, defense attorney. We'll learn an awful lot from those prosecutions as well. So we're going to find out most of what we need to know about this. One partisan commission, pretty well assembled by Nancy Pelosi, was not going to answer any questions that we can't get another way.
Yeah, well, that's good to know what you say there. I didn't realize that, but I'm happy to hear that, actually. And you seem very confident that you'll get to some sort of a conclusion. I also like when you say a historical record, and I think all Americans can agree with you there. It is good to have some historical context on this. I think also as a caveat to this, Senator Johnson, most patriots, most people love their country, know exactly what happened on January 6th, and they totally get it. And I'll leave that thought there, because I don't need to ad lib any more to it. But I think Americans and patriots by far and large know what happened on the 6th. And I think that's why the Democrat machine left that barricaded and totally locked down there for quite some time. We've never seen that happen before in our country either. I got to get your opinion on H.R. 1. What's the latest on this? Because the House, of course, passed on a party line vote. We know that this is a complete power grab for election reform. What's your gut tell you about this? Will this are you concerned with this, or does this thing fail on all counts, or do they push this through?
As long as Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema remain healthy and honor their pledge to maintain the filibuster, you don't have to worry about most of this stuff. The only thing you have to worry about is these big spending packages, big tax and spend packages that Democrats can pass through another budget reconciliation process yet this year, and then another one in 2022. So there's an awful lot of damage the Democrats can and will do using budget reconciliations two more times before the midterm elections. But in terms of these policy changes that don't really affect the budget, as long as we have the filibuster there, I don't think people have to worry. I think Republicans will be united and prevent that from happening.
Okay. In reflection, you're a two-term senator. You're gonna. I don't think you've made the decision yet about 2022, have you?
No, I haven't.
All right. You, now, listen. When you break that story, or unless you're ready to break it now, you better not do. You better come back here and help us. Don't give it to the mainstream media, but Senator Johnson. But when do you think you'll make that decision?
Really, not for quite a while, Malcolm. There's really no need to. Really? No, listen. These campaigns are way too long.
Okay.
They spend way too much money. When I first ran for the Senate, not being a politician, I didn't even decide till April of 2010. Announced in May, got the Republican Party Wisconsin endorsement in May, and ran a 5-6 month campaign and won. Yeah. Knocked off Russ Feingold, an incumbent. So you don't have to be doing this for 18 months, 2 years. Mm-hmm. I'll make my decision in plenty of time.
All right. Well, you've been there long enough now. I mean, you're coming on two terms here as a senator, so you'll have 12 years in the bag, whatever you decide to do. And I just want to ask you this, a final thought, and I'm sure you've thought about this. As a businessman from the private side, and I know what that feels like because I've been one all my life, and a two-term senator now, how do you sum up, really, though, truly, politics in Washington, and what would you change going forward where the Republican Party could be in a better position to fight back on America's far, far left turn?
First of all, it is enormously frustrating. Congress is a very collegial place. We don't fight like cats and dogs, on an interpersonal level. There are a lot of good people. There are a lot of smart people. I think people go there, generally with very good intentions. But the real crux of the problem here, Malcolm, is that so many people, whether it's staff, whether it's bureaucrats, whether it's members of Congress, have limited or no experience in the private sector. They have limited or no knowledge of it and very little sympathy for it. And so here you've got people writing laws, controlling all of our lives, controlling the private sector, and they don't know anything about it, or they know very little about it. They haven't experienced it. They haven't worked in the business. They've really not even been in a functioning organization where you have a mission and vision statement, you set your goals, everybody's kind of, it's like herding cats, So no, it's an incredibly dysfunctional place. It absolutely drives me nuts. So the only solution is limit it, quit growing it, start shrinking at some point in time and return to the vision of our founding fathers, which is government close to the governed. My big push in Wisconsin right now is to get Republicans to run for every line on the ballot. I think conservatives have done such a terrible job at ignoring local and state government and focusing on the presidency or U.S. Senate seats. No, we have to focus like the radical left has on school boards and county boards. That's why they've controlled our culture. They control education. So I am trying to get a Republican and conservative on every line of the ballot, not only in Wisconsin, but throughout America. Then we can take back our school boards, our local government, and then states can start demanding the governing power back from the federal government. Okay, that's the only solutions that I can see. We have to start shrinking Washington, D.C.'s influence over our lives.
It could hardly be said any better than that. And right now, by the way, there's a standing ovation of listeners that are applauding what you just said, because that would be a conservative and American patriot's dream to get back to those roots that you just described. Senator Johnson, thank you wholeheartedly for being with us. And I hope you return again back to Viewpoint this Sunday. Thank you, brother.
I just appreciate that opportunity. Stay well.
Thank you. All right. So let me tell you also, listeners, one other thing we have coming up in just a moment here. You'll hear in the break here, Healthy Cell. You've been hearing us talk about it on the network here. Very interesting product they have out. It's called Immune Super Boost. Immune Super Boost. It's got all the products in there to fight COVID. It's got all the things you hear about the zinc, and you hear about all of the different ones you've got to take to be able to fight this vitamin D and vitamin A. And this product has it all. It's an Immune Super Boost. All the products at Healthy Cell are terrific. You get 20% off as our listener to check it out. So just go to healthycell.com/outloud and you'll get the 20% off as our listener. Their products are tremendous, incredible. You'll even hear the docs talking about it on the platform here. We're going to talk more about China just ahead. We have two experts coming on here and we'll discuss more of the relationship there and what's happening ahead there. Stay right there, my fellow Americans. More Viewpoint in just a moment. Thank you.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
So I want to talk a little further about China right now, starting with the Wuhan deal as to why that has become an interest. Even Fauci, he's head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the NIH, and very interesting. He's come out and said he's not sure that he's even convinced. Of course, that was today. That may change at 5 o'clock when happy hour comes, so we won't hold our breath, right? Let me get on with it now and bring on a couple of gentlemen here we're going to talk to here. We'll start first with Wallace Garneau joins us. Wallace spent 23 years as e-commerce manager, IT manager, director of business systems for a variety of manufacturing companies. His book, The Way Forward, Lean Leadership and Systems, Thinking for Large and Small Business, is great. You can get that in the America Out Loud bookstore. Wallace, why do you think all of a sudden it's okay to talk about it? Like, because you, the woke people got really mad when you talked about that before and they all jumped on you. But now it seems to be, now they're all questioning, did this come from the bat in the soup or the seafood market, or did this really come from the lab? And of course, we all always knew, we believe, where it came from. What do you think the sudden interest is?
Well, this might surprise a bit, Malcolm, but I think the interest is actually still a way to deflect away from what the true story is. The true story, as usual, it's not what's being reported. It's what's not being reported. And what's not being reported, you might remember when this whole thing started out, China said, ooh, virus in Wuhan. They shut travel down between Wuhan and the rest of China while leaving travel between Wuhan and the rest of the world open, and then denied whether or not there was any such thing as human-to-human transmission until literally the day after the CDC gave independent confirmation that this thing was live in the United States. That's an act of war. That was, whether or not it was, you know, whether it was a biological weapon that was released intentionally or they just found it and felt they were lucky, it was an act of war. I believe that one of their intents in letting it get to the United States was to dethrone the presidency, the Trump presidency, and in order to make sure they had somebody a hell of a lot easier than Donald Trump to negotiate trade with. So while I'm upset about, well, we've known for over a year this could have been a biological weapon. It's not like this is anything new. Trump said it was a biological weapon, if there was evidence at least that it could be a biological weapon, almost as soon as we knew the damn thing existed. And of course, the whole reason everybody had to say it wasn't a biological weapon, and you were a conspiracy theorist if you said it might be, was because Donald Trump said it was. They do the same thing with HCQ. There are studies now from the National Institutes of Health that say that if you take hydrochloroquine along with zinc early enough after developing symptoms, it's damn near a cure. And they're still lying about that. So to me, it's not just the fact that this was created in a laboratory. The real thing is that it was, whether or not it was created as a weapon, it was certainly weaponized once it got into the public. It was used as a weapon of mass destruction, if not to throw the entire world into chaos, at least over to change our election. And you know, I'm mad as hell about it. Nobody in the media wants to talk about any of those things.
I think many of us felt really what you said there, we would agree with the fact that a lot of that was to get Trump out of office. They didn't want to deal with him anymore. Like you say, the trade deals, all of that. I mean, Trump was at their throat with trying to get a moment of truth in there. Xi Jinping and company and the CCP were not happy with that or any part of it. And if you think back to November of 2019, we were doing like swimmingly well as a nation. And Trump had all the cylinders blowing through it all. And so when you think about it, what else would you use possibly to take this country down? Well, the handy dandy virus is what it was. Now, what's really weird about this, I want to bring on a gentleman now, another really interesting guy, because he is an author as well as he's an author, but he wrote a prophetic novel on some of this stuff, which is hard to believe. But let me introduce you now to Michael McCarthy is here, and he's a student of the free market economics, and he foresaw the acceleration of big government control in politics. And again, the Noah option and the Rainbow option are two books that you got to check out there in the bookstore as well, or where you buy your books. Michael, the factor of getting Trump out of office, was in your mind, your estimation, was that really the point of the whole thing as to why this, what many of us would agree was a biological weapon that was unleashed onto the world and more so unleashed onto the Trump administration? We would probably second that one. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. They had tried everything to get Trump out. Nothing worked. They were desperate. We're getting into the election season, and so it was release the Kraken, release the Wuhan virus. And of course, Fauci helped fund the damn thing, and so they knew exactly what they were doing.
It was a perfect storm, wasn't it now,
Michael? Yeah, it was a perfect storm. Trump, every time you see a Trump rally, there's thousands, if not tens of thousands of people. Yeah. When Biden would come out of his, like the groundhog coming out of his basement, he'd be eight people. But the Democrats did not seem to be worried about that. Well, now we knew why, because the fix was in. They knew they had it rigged with this mail-in ballots and the algorithms rigged under cover of the Wuhan virus.
Yeah.
So that we would think, oh, this is not a Democrat thing. This is impartial biological.
Let me ask you this here on the Wuhan thing, since you were prophetic in some of the stuff yourself. Do you think we'll ever really have the conclusion, the final answer to this biological weapon or not? I mean, will it ever come out into the public, you think?
Well, I don't know, but I hope so. You know, some of the recent Fauci emails that were released under that Freedom of Information Act, where some of his own advisors are saying, look, there's segments in the genome here that indicate it would be an engineered product, not a naturally occurred product. Well, he carefully kept quiet about all that, never uttered a word about it, might be biological. So I think the fix was in with him also, and they want to keep it that way because, as Wally says, if it's known to be an engineered product, it's an act of war. But if they can keep clouding the waters by saying, oh, no, it was the bats, it was this and that.
Yeah.
They can claim, oh, no, it wasn't us. It wasn't an act of war.
All right.
Just one of these freaks of
nature. Okay. We're in some very strange moments with our relationship with China. I want to talk about next and the way we deal with China, both historically. Because, again, as I always tell listeners, China always, they are brilliant at playing the long game. They always are, just like a lot of countries, are far better than playing the long game than we are here in America. Here in our nation, they play to the next election. And it's part of our system and what happens. And it's more of a self-serving attitude. Hooray for me and the hell with you. But it really is how our political system runs here. Not so much in China. It's a different animal there, the CCP and how they run this. Michael, you wrote an article, We Are Becoming a Colony of China. And you referenced the relationship as like a colony. To the point, answer the specific question. What is different about the U.S. relationship with China specifically versus other countries?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, we export a lot of raw materials to China and import back from China the finished products, which is the classic textbook definition of a colony and a mother country. We're in effect now the colony and they are the mother country, shipping back the value added products. So for example, if we ship the plastic pellets, they use those for injection molding and create plastic products with tools and so forth. You can't buy a power tool. You go into these big box home improvement stores, all the power tools are made in China. You can't find any made in the United States anymore.
Right. That's right.
Well, that's as a result of our technology going to China. And like Wally, I'm also worked in a lot of factories and with lean manufacturing. And I can remember a gentleman in a factory back perhaps 15 years ago saying, you know, I've got to go outsource to China because all my competitors are doing
and they'll
beat me on price.
Yeah.
But I know what's going to happen. When I ship my mold over there, this Chinese factory, whoever it is, over the weekend, he's going to take my mold down the street to his brother-in-law, who's going to make a carbon copy of it, and then a counterfeit copy of my product will be coming out within a month or so and undercut me on the price. Now, the research and development and the engineering that went into creating that mold was American-built, and that man paid for it. China gets it for free, which is why they can undercut us on price, because they're stealing our research and development.
You know, Wally, I remember as a kid, about everything you bought, everything you looked at, everything you seen, it was always, you turn it over, it was always made in China or made in Taiwan. It was always that way. And we used to chuckle as kids about it, thinking, what the hell is really made here? And it was funny. But, you know, here's the thing, Wally. It was a little more innocent back then when we were thinking, well, like he was just saying, Michael, well, they kind of went that way because it was economically proven that it was more beneficial to profit. And if you want a really good balance sheet, well, you send all this crap to China. Today, I think there's another piece of if you're doing that, I think there's a patriotic point where you're killing our country, because I think about all Americans know that China is our enemy now. They are no longer just a casual adversary or a foe or somebody we can deal with. They seem to be, I mean, is that what you get out of the relationship with China? And maybe I'll ask you that question. Are they our enemy or not?
Well, Malcolm, China in 2015, their war college wrote an article in English of all things. It's freely available online. And they said that there are three kinds of warfare. They said that you have kinetic warfare, which is, of course, guns blazing, a shooting war. You have information warfare, which is trying to control the access to information so that you can manipulate a population. And also, you know, IT-type warfare. There are two types of information warfare. But the big one isn't IT. It's not, you know, hacking into computer systems or shutting down computer systems. The big one is actually controlling a population's access to information. And the third, and of course, is economic warfare. Economic warfare is primarily mercantilism, getting into the whole colonialization thing. England, late in its colonial period, in its empire, they realized that trying to keep a thumb on all of their colonies, trying to keep their colonies poor, didn't work very well. So they started kind of turning into a free trade empire where they would trade stuff with all of their colonies, and they allowed the colonies to get rich because they realized that the richer their colonies got, the richer they got as well. Prior to that, all of the colonies of the European countries had, they were all practicing mercantilism. And in mercantilism, you send your people over there, you extract their natural resources, bring the natural resources back to the home country, and then try to get wealthy without allowing any of that wealth to get back to the colonies. And the way that China does that with us is they'll send us products, you know, a television set, a solar panel, whatever it is, we send them paper. Now, those U.S. dollars aren't very valuable on the streets of Beijing. They have to, when they get a dollar into a company, what they'll do with those dollars is they will convert those into yuan, and then those dollars go to the companies that do those conversions. But they eventually end up with the Chinese Communist Party with their central bank, and the central bank just sits on them. If they have to, they'll buy U.S. savings bonds. But what they're really doing is they're hoarding those dollars in the form of savings bonds to avoid the need to buy American goods and services. What they're trying to do is they're trying to make trade with the United States entirely a one-way street, where we buy all of their stuff and they don't buy anything from us in return. Now, they do buy raw materials, as Michael said, because we're such a large country in terms of making raw materials. In many cases, particularly with food, there's just nowhere else to go. So they will buy raw materials from us. But what they're really trying to do more than anything else is to take as many U.S. dollars as they can and park them so that we're buying their goods and materials and putting their people to work and enriching their lives without them buying our goods and services at all. And in terms of the other two types of warfare, you know, they run our media. I mean, we remember the whole thing with the NBA where a general manager tweeted,
"That's right,
free Hong Kong." Well, they had a contract with the NBA where they were opening up China to the NBA. And the NBA was allowed to have games in China. They were going to be selling merchandise in China. China was going to have all of their games on television for the Chinese audience to watch, because I guess the NBA is very popular there. And in return, the NBA agreed that everybody employed by the NBA, by a team of the NBA, you know, anybody affiliated with the NBA in terms of employment, would voluntarily have to agree to submit to Chinese censorship. Now, they've got the same thing going with Time Warner and with our other media houses, where they've made agreements with China and partnerships with China media houses, which are fully owned subsidiaries of the Chinese government. And in return, having access to the Chinese market, which is roughly four times the size of our media market, so potentially far more profitable than ours, they've agreed to submit what we see to Chinese censorship, which means that they're committing informational warfare against the American people by controlling our access to information. All this crap with CRT and everything else, a lot of that is sponsored by, and in many cases, the colleges are getting funding by to do this so-called research. That's all being sponsored by China. China's in love with that. They see Black Lives Matter rioting in the streets, Antifa rioting in the streets. They love that. It's actually got to the point where our trade delegations go to China. They don't use their anti-American propaganda against us. They just pull up CNN's website and use the stuff we've done against us, because our anti-American propaganda has gotten much better than theirs.
In fact, you can see Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin at a champagne party toasting for how screwed up they've made this country here, because we're upside down backwards right now, and the way we're at each other's throats is pretty remarkable. Michael, let me bring you back into the conversation here, please. And back to what Wallace has put out there, which I think is perfect in the way they're shifting the culture. Here's the thing about this. The trade deficits that Wallace was just referring to, Trump went after those trade deficits full throttle, because he's seen that from the high towers in New York. He's seen what China was doing, fixing this moving forward. I mean, right now, we've got the wrong people in power, obviously, to fix any of this. But what do you think, Michael, the answer is? Because I think people understand and are fearful right now, Americans are, that China is breathing down our back much quicker than people thought, with their 1.4 billion people. As he said, four times the size of where we are in America is accurate. What does the future hold?
Well, the future is going to hold more of the same if we can't start bringing our manufacturing back on shore and realizing that we are shipping all of our engineering expertise to China for free because they're stealing it. They do not respect intellectual property rights. Glaring example of this was espionage. Mm-hmm. The first time I saw a photograph of the new Chinese stealth fighter, mm-hmm. it's a carbon copy of the American F-25 fighter plane. I mean, I'm no military expert, but I could just, all you have to do is look at it. And you can see that they clearly stole all the.
But isn't that always their MO, Michael? They do that on everything, and they get it and they reverse engineer it. Correct? That's what they
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what Trump was starting to crack down on, the intellectual property theft.
Absolutely.
And I think American manufacturers have got to say, hey, stop shipping our technology to China. Americans are now to the point where I think we're willing to pay a little more. Wally and I are both familiar with lean manufacturing, about how it improved quality so much. Well, China simply used the theft of technology plus currency manipulation to keep product prices low. We're seeing the cost of that now. Yeah. I just had a microwave go out on me that's only a little over a year old, just over the warranty period. All of these are made in China. And microwaves were invented here in America. The last American-made microwave I had lasted 15 to 20 years.
Well, the only answer I have back for you is to eat cold food, and that's the way you'll get around the microwave thing. But you're right. Last final thought here. Wally, I want to mention an article to folks because it plays into a little bit of what we're talking about, and there's further conversation you and I will have on this. You wrote a piece a few weeks back or sometime here of America Out Loud, Push versus Pull Economics and the Morality of Free Markets. And I like it a lot because you get into the driving force behind socialism, which is communism, which is China. And it's not based really on socialism being more efficient, but based on the idea that the balance that the free market moves toward is somehow not moral. And that is a lot of the argument we're hearing now, is the morality. I think this is something we need to talk about more in the future, because right now where they're going up with the entire tax structure, they're accusing, they're, you know, guilty as charged that capitalism is alive and well and people want to make a profit. The real struggle we're having, Wallace, is a lot of those people have sold out to China in the past. Okay, it's great if your balance sheet looks good, but at the end of the day, if you don't have a freaking country left, you're not going to have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's correct. The other interesting thing about that is when we start talking about the morality of one economy versus the morality of another economy, you know, we might as well be talking about chairs, that this chair is moral and this chair is immoral. The fact of the matter is economies don't have morals any more than a chair does. What have morals are people. And if you had an economy in which the people were so incredibly moral that socialism could work, in other words, people were as willing or more willing to work for other people's interests as they are to work for their own and their own family's interests, socialism would still be a terrible kind of economy to have, because capitalism would work much better in an environment where people were that kind of generous. They'd make great wealth. They'd give it back. They'd give it away to other people who need it more. I mean, it would be a tremendous wealth generation capability for charities and what have you. And we actually saw that in the 1800s. The 1800s, in addition to being the time of the so-called robber baron, are also when all our charities and colleges and universities were built. And that was all built with money that the so-called robber barons had. And they said, I don't need all of this. I guess I could spend a lot of this on charitable things. So when you talk about that, you know, that's the idea of an economy having morality or immorality is just ridiculous. People do, and any economy is going to reflect the morality of the people that were in it. We saw that with Mao's China. We saw it with Stalin's Russia. You know, any economy is going to have morality of the people that are in it. So the whole idea of economies having morality or it being immoral is ridiculous. In terms of push or pull mechanics, what I tried to do in that article is I tried to look at a manufacturing center or different manufacturing centers, and there are really two ways to run them. You can run them in kind of a command sort of way, where you use an ERP system, essential resources planning, and you try to push materials where this program says you're going to need them at the times that you're going to need them. So you've right. got inventory where you need it, people where you need it, and everything, and you're able to run your manufacturing center that way. And I compare that to lean manufacturing, where what you do is you have the demand for products being sold kind of pulling materials through, where they use a system called a Kanban, which is like a card that, you know, maybe I've got five of these things in one manufacturing line. And as soon as I pull one of those saying I've used one of these goods, it goes back to the manufacturing line that produces that thing, whatever it is, and tells them produce another one of these. So, you know, that's how you do pull manufacturing. And it's just far more efficient. It produces far more value than a push system does. It doesn't have as many problems. Well, there are problems. It recovers faster. And we actually have that in our economy. It's called the U.S. dollar. When you go to the store and you buy something, that sends that the store takes that dollar, they send it to the company that made that thing, and that sends a signal to that company to make another one of those things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more efficient. And then since an economy's morality, really, when you think about it, if you want to talk about it, the morality or immorality of an economy, you know, we're all a part of the economy. So mm-hmm. when you talk about the needs and the desires of the American people, if we're all taking care of that for ourselves, we're in an economy where that's possible. If the people are all taken care of, to me, that's as moral as it gets.
The basic fundamentals of life, and as you look deep enough in any of these arguments and debates we're having, it makes perfect sense. There's always a line of truth that you need to discover. Both of these guys are brilliant writers. They're terrific and just good thinkers, big thinkers, I always say here. Wallace Garneau, Michael McCarthy, please check out their books as well. We'll have some of that information right back for you at America Out Loud. Speaking of which, we are experiencing just incredible growth back to the network. Obviously, much of America is waking up to find ourselves in a socialist environment. And the free press is absent, and the oligarchs and the social media and the media, people are absent for any level of truth, as we were speaking to with Senator Ron Johnson up top of the program. It is important, the work we're doing here at America Out Loud. And so we ask you to be part of the movement and the change here and what we are accomplishing at our network and our platform here. We love our nation. We love our Constitution. We love all patriots and all Americans here and look for a brighter future for all. My fellow Americans, thank you, as always, for joining us here on Viewpoint this Sunday. It's time to get involved and get loud.